What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Welcome to Required Listening. I'm your host, Scott Goldman, Executive Director of the Grammy Museum. Each week in the Clive Davis Theater, I have the chance to speak with artists from across the musical spectrum about their careers, their inspirations, and their creative process. Now, I am a very lucky guy, as are the 200 people that get to join me at the Grammy Museum. Now, with Required Listening, I'm excited to share these interviews with you. On today's episode, my conversation with singer-songwriter Aloe Black. We got together just after he released a new track called Brooklyn in the Summer. He released his major label debut, Lift Your Spirit, in 2014. And his track Wake Me Up, a collaboration with the EDM artist Avicii, reached the top five of the Billboard chart and top charts around the world. Lift Your Spirit received a Grammy nomination for Best R&B Album at the 57th Annual Grammy Awards. Most recently, Black served as the guide for the film America's Musical Journey, traveling throughout the country as he traced the roots of American music. Most important, he is passionate about using his artistic platform to affect social change while continuing to create music with a mindful positivity. So let's go to the Clive Davis Theater and listen to my conversation with Aloe Black. All right. Well, Aloe Black, welcome to Required Listening.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
You know, we're thrilled to have you. Want to chat a little bit about, you know, some of the new music that you've been making. There's a track out, Brooklyn in the Summer, which, you know, according to the things I've read, is a somewhat of a new direction for you.
I think every time I put music out, it's a new direction, but, this song is definitely a topic and a style that I haven't really employed in any frequency in the past. And I guess, you know, if you listen to the old stuff, there's nothing that sounds like it. But I think that's pretty characteristic of every time I put out new music.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have had particularly one artist in particular, I recall a couple of years ago, said the following to me. He said, every record I make is a reaction to the last record I made.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm wondering for you, is this track and maybe thinking about the album to come somewhat of a reaction to Lift Your Spirit?
No, I think the time has been so far since Lift Your Spirit that this is more of a concerted effort to make music that hits different themes. Mm. I think generally the songs that I enjoy writing and that I write most frequently are songs with themes of aspiration or inspiration, motivation. And Brooklyn in the Summer is a love song. So I thought it would be interesting to try on this new hat as an artist. For me, it's a new hat. For the music industry, it's 99% of the radio and songs that you hear.
The personal relationship.
Personal relationship. It's just not something that I used to do because as a hip-hop artist, as an MC back in the day, you would only do a love track few and far between, you mm-hmm. know. LL Cool J did I Need Love. He killed it. That was the best one. Nobody needs to do another one.
Is the direction in terms of talking about, you know, mm-hmm. personal relationships somewhat of a window into the new album?
It's sort of a window into the new album. I wanted to spend more time talking about relationships and songs that had a story about love that wasn't just general, you know, love for humanity, which mm-hmm. is what I do quite often. I wanted to be more specific about romantic relationships. And this is, you know, just for me, I look at my contemporaries and think about the songs that I've made that have become hits, and they've all been other than romantic topics. I figure yeah. I could probably, you know, sell a few songs with a romantic topic. But aside from the business, it was just, you know, I'm married. I'm married and I have kids and I have love in my life, and I wanted to express this side of my artistry. Mm.
Does it require a different kind of songwriting?
It does.
A different kind of headspace?
It does require a different headspace and different songwriting, especially when you're not used to it. Like, I mean, I can be open about a lot of things in my music. The one thing I never was open about, and I have to learn to be open about, is, you know, my relationships, my personal relationships. Mm. So I think I cheated a little bit, especially with Brooklyn in the Summer. I borrowed someone else's relationship. I collaborate a lot on this new album, and this song was co-written with Jay Stolar, who's a brilliant songwriter and singer. But this is Brooklyn in the Summer is his love story. Mm. I just helped to write, you know, edit it and write the bridge and kind of make it come to life.
Yeah. Sonically, it's got a terrific energy
yeah.
to it. And I'm wondering if that too, you know, just thinking about the sound of the song is a different direction.
Yeah. I mean, sonically it's much more of a pop sound and polished sound than I'm used to, you know. When in the past, my first solo album Shine Through, I was just kind of making a mixture of all different genres and sounds and styles, but I wanted it to be gritty in it. So it had grit in it. And then the Good Things album was throwback soul. Mm. So it, you know, by its own nature, it had to have some grit. And then Lift Your Spirit was this kind of mixture of the sonic fidelity of hip hop, the musicality of soul music, and folk soul vocal on top. But I didn't really push for pop. In this particular track, Brooklyn in the Summer, it feels soulful. It's written soulful. The melodies and the lyrics are really unique. But there's a nice polish on top that, you know, kind of makes it a pop track.
Yeah, yeah. You can definitely hear that. And I'm wondering for you, is this taking your music in a more modern direction? Because I think sometimes you've been saddled a little bit with that throwback sort of,
yeah, I mean,
you know, throwback, typecast.
Yeah, throwback is where I made my name. So, you know, I find that in the music business, really, you know, not necessarily the art of it, there are characters that exist, and you play your role. And when you play your role well enough, you become consistent enough for people to recognize and remember who you are, and to expect and anticipate. And you want to give them something new, but you also want to give them something familiar. With Brooklyn in the Summer, I can see where people will hear it and have no clue that it's me singing. And I think that's interesting. It's an interesting experiment to try, especially, you know, in this era of the game. The last record I put out, streaming wasn't the standard. It was kind of an introductory or early period, but now it's the standard, and we'll see how it works. You know, if the song on its own merit will rise without an attachment to my history or my name, we'll see. I think it will.
And these days, perhaps more than ever, that's the challenge for artists, is kind of finding their place, becoming recognizable for a sound, mm-hmm. but having the freedom to be an artist.
Yeah, for me, if I have not signed a contract with a company where I was going to have a partnership and we have to have mutual decisions on what we release, it would be crazy for people to understand what I'm trying to do. They wouldn't have an idea of what my direction is or what my sound is, because I make songs in every style and every genre. And for me, there are no rules. And because there are no rules, I need a producer to kind of corral, wrangle me in and like make it sound consistent and offer some, some semblance, some symmetry.
Yeah.
Across the project.
Yeah.
Otherwise, really, it's going to be everywhere.
Which, in one sense, is an advantage. You know, you want to be artistically curious.
I think it's an advantage these days because I think there's something about the roller coaster ride that is exciting and fun for people who are listening to music and enjoying the story of an artist's journey. I think. The days of the superhero character of an artist aren't long gone. They're still around, but I think they need to be challenged in a major way. I love when I see an artist transform. Andre 3000 going from rap guy to singing guy to acting guy, you know what I'm saying? And to see Childish Gambino do the same kind of rap, acting, singing, it's interesting, and I think it is the way. It really is the way to graduate in hip hop. And I graduated early because I started doing hip hop in 95 and I started doing the singing thing in 2005. So I was kind of following the footsteps of Andre and Lauryn Hill. And I just want to see more of that transformation happen faster and not so typecast.
Yeah. But in the era now of streaming, there is the opportunity, because it is so now immediate. I mean,
it's immediate. The metabolism is instant.
Yeah, you could record something here today, and it could be up on Spotify tomorrow, and around the world instantly.
Yeah.
And what I find fascinating about, particularly with streaming, the opportunity for discovery as a listener is greater than it's ever been. Now, there's nobody telling you what to. Radio isn't like curating what you're hearing. You have to be a little more proactive as a listener, I think.
It ends up being a top-down system. There are just functional technologies and methodologies that we can't get away from, like a list. So we have playlists. We don't have play trees, right? We don't have play associative diagrams. It's a list, and somebody chooses what goes at the top. That's how it works. So although radio is not giving you your top down kind of choices, somebody is somewhere. On all of the playlists somewhere. It would be awesome if it was truly random and that everybody had the opportunity when they went on to discover something brand new and not always have the same 10 songs at the top of the playlist that are further, kind of popularizing those 10 songs.
Do the deep dive.
But that's how it is. Yes. And you're right. It is more proactive. It is more proactive. You can go online and you have to kind of know what you want to find, unless you're going to sit back and let somebody give you the ride that they've already chosen. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that you've talked about, particularly thinking about the album that's coming, is that it should be more reflective of your live performance.
That's right. You know, my live performance is high energy, and I love to do call and response and sing with the crowd and get them to dance. It's just part of my background, learning how to rock a stage as a hip hop artist. So when I started singing, I was like, well, I don't want to do boring slow songs. That's not fun for a show. And I'm still learning to become comfortable with that. And I do it well when it's like me in an acoustic performance with my guitarist or my pianist, and it's a sit down audience, and I get to just talk to people and keep it real comfortable and relaxed. But when it's a standing audience and there are big speakers and I have a full band, I'm ready to rock. Yeah.
And there is something, there is something remarkable that happens, particularly in those, in those bigger live performance settings, in terms of the energy that is hard to recreate, I think, in the studio.
I mean, in the studio is one thing. I definitely have learned to be less picky about what happens with a recording, because I know that the song is going to grow on stage. Mm. And then I have the rest of my life to re-record it, or let other people in the world re-record it and build it and let it grow. The getting what you do live captured in the studio, very difficult. And sometimes it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't translate well. I've tried that. So I tried the old method of write a song, tour the song, then record the song. And when we recorded the songs, they just didn't feel right on record.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it works for other people. It just didn't work for me.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, a lot of times the studio can be kind of a cold, sort of sterile environment. You don't feel...
It doesn't have the same energy. I think there are artists who have the ability to put themselves into that mind state so that they can get the stage performance in the studio. And then there are artists who cannot alter their mind state at all. They're always on, just always on. So it's going to be that performance.
Right.
I'm different. I'm a very relaxed kind of guy. When I'm on stage, there's definitely the live energy character. I can turn it on in the studio. It's just not going to be the same.
Yeah.
Okay. I love Walker Hayes. He's amazing. He's so fun. Such a great entertainer. And that's why I'm so excited that JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited time men's collection for the everyday guy. The Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection is an upbeat playlist of instant classics with laid back appeal and down-home vibes. As a dad of 7 kids, he knows exactly what fathers want and need when it comes to their style. This collection reflects his casually cool styles with outdoor-inspired details and versatile colors. Perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th, just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global. Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
I was interested to learn that you have a real sensitivity to the classic singer-songwriters.
Yeah, for sure.
Whether it's Joni Mitchell or Cat Stevens or James Taylor, whoever it might be. What is it about that music?
Just take the music aside. It's just the words, right? Put the words on paper and somebody read it and it'll make them cry. That's important. I get really frustrated with music in the marketplace that is not fully, thought out and put together. Like some people, if they're making a song, they allow the production to like stilt whatever they're lacking on the lyrical side. Mm-hmm. And they allow, you know, maybe the mix to fulfill what they're lacking on the melodic side or whatever. I think that's just lazy. Like write some words down first. Make sure those words are bomb. Make sure that if you play, if you let somebody read those words, there's no music and you're no voice, that they're going to feel like it's an important story that matters. Then come up with a great melody and make sure that melody works for a 3-year-old and an 83-year-old. Hmm. Then find some other instruments to add to it and a great producer who can kind of direct what sound it should be for the time. That's the marketing. The production is the marketing. But if you don't have a song, I don't want to hear all the extra marketing because you're selling me vacuous sound.
Yeah, I think every great producer will tell you it comes down to the song.
Absolutely.
You can do all kinds of things in the studio. You can make all kinds of magic.
I've done it before. And I piss myself off when I do it because like I know better. I know better than just string some empty words together on top of a beat that sounds great. It's really important for me. And that's why I love a Joni Mitchell or a James Taylor, a Cat Stevens, a Bernie Taupin, right? Because Elton John in the early stuff didn't pen. He just did the melodies and music. Those are poems that mean something forever. Mm. And, you know, that's what I like to live up to and try to.
Are you writing all the time? Are you disciplined about that?
I'm not disciplined in the way where I'm like writing a song every day from beginning to end, but I do have a discipline of constantly fielding inspiration from the atmosphere, from wherever, whatever is happening. Like yesterday I had a conversation with a friend. He said a string of words and a whole other string of words that were sort of related came to mind, and I wrote them down because I feel like this might be a great idea. Like when I wrote Wake Me Up When It's All Over, Wake Me Up, the first idea I had was Wake Me Up When It's All Over When I'm Older and I'm Sober. And the first thing I wrote was Wake Me Up When It's All Over. That's a common cliche phrase. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
What comes next is where you do the familiar and the novel, right? People want something familiar. They want something new. That's what a roller coaster ride is. I know I'm going to strap up. I just don't know when I'm going to drop. So when I'm older and sober didn't sit with me well because it wasn't my story. When I'm wiser and I'm older was the rewrite that I ended up doing, and it worked. Interesting enough that when I brought those lyrics in, it was going to be working with Avicii, and either one of those lyrics would have worked. It's just kind of, a coincidence.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we'll get to that conversation.
Well, as long as you're there, I have to ask you about Avicii. So unfortunate to hear of his passing.
It's deeply saddening. It is really hard for me to take because I know how much he loved music. Mm. And I feel like we've lost one of the, you know, greatest producers of our time. And I say that because I've worked with a lot of different producers. He didn't have the same kind of musical knowledge that some of the producers and musicians that I work with have in terms of a training. But he did have the knowledge. Mm-hmm. I don't know how he had the knowledge, but maybe he was, you know, a savant or something like that. But when he worked on music, he knew what he wanted and how to get it with the tools that he was using. And I just found that really fascinating.
Yeah.
It's just, very tragic that he's gone.
I read that you had something like 40 songs kind of ready to go or in some stage.
Yeah, in some stage, right.
For the album. So the question becomes, how do you choose what ends up on the record? Do you have criteria? Is it thematic? Is it sonic? Or is it just a gut thing?
Well, okay, so I can't take the businessman out of me.
Okay.
Like, I've always done it from the beginning of my career, like handled all my business. And then even after university, I went to go work in corporate America. So yes. There's like this business guy who's like, okay, what's going to be the best package to put into the marketplace? Mm-hmm. And so I'm always thinking in that way. And that's sometimes how I choose the songs. And that's definitely works with the record label. Record label wants like 4 songs that are going to be no brainer. These are, you know, they have artistic merit, but mm-hmm. they also will work in the marketplace. And then the rest of the songs, I just kind of choose which ones I like that can round out an album. And because I want to have a theme of more of the romantic and love topic on this album, I'm going to choose the songs that lean in that way rather than the songs that lean toward inspiration, motivation,
yeah,
aspiration.
Yeah. You've mentioned a couple times, you know, being in partnership, you know, with a record label.
Yeah.
And you know, I've talked to many artists for whom that sort of cuts both ways. Mm-hmm. You seem to have a very good, very grounded perspective of what it means to be in business with a major record label.
Yeah, I mean, it's business. Yeah. You sign a contract. Yeah. It's an agreement. It's your word. So you just hope that both sides will keep the word. And that's how you operate based on that trust.
Yeah. One of the things that seems to be happening across, whether it's hip hop or pop, is, you know, the idea of artists, and particularly at the shall we say, inspiration of a record label, mm. going into the studio with multiple producers, multiple writers, and one man's opinion, making music by committee. You know, in effect,
that
seems to be what's happening. Has that ever been suggested to you?
No. It's not suggested. It's just the modus operandi. Mm-hmm. That's just the way. That's the way I found it to be in this more recent iteration of my career. In the past, there was no committee. I mean, I think art can't be done by committee.
Yeah.
But you know, this is the record business. If I wanted to just create art, I wouldn't be in the record business. Mm. I would just create art. Mm. And I do. I just don't mingle it with the business. So when I do my Eminon project, which is my hip hop project with DJ Exile, we just make the stuff and we put it out. We put it up on the streaming services, we put it up on the download services, and then I put it on my website for people to download for free. Mm. Because that is art. I'm not selling it. There's no business here. I'm not trying to compete. I'm not trying to battle rap against somebody else. Yes, I got bars. Yes, I can beat people in a freestyle battle, but I'm not here to compete. Mm. I'm here to show you the art, and I have a message in my art. Now, when I'm singing and I do stuff with my label, that's a different story.
Yeah, yeah. Did you have to carve that out of your label deal?
Yeah, it was carved out.
Yeah. Yeah. You're originally from Panama.
My parents are from Panama. I grew up here, Southern California.
How much do your Panamanian roots play into your musical?
It's in there. It's in there. It's almost every song, I'd say. I grew up listening to a lot of Caribbean music. So there are rhythms, West African rhythms, that make it into my songs that people don't hear necessarily, but... And sometimes I don't even know it until like way later that it's there. And it, you know, from like bass lines that are slowed versions of calypso bass lines or montuno rhythms from salsa music or the clave in Latin music. Mm-hmm. All these things will make it in. And then there's a certain particular kind of way that I was employing in this process of the album that mimicked the crooning style of a salsero, like the way that salsa singers sing. There's a very particular style that's from, you know, like the early 70s and early era of salsa, which is a derivative of son. And I wanted to use it because it felt so good. It felt so home. It felt so natural to me. I don't know if any of that's going to make the album.
Yeah.
But these songs are written and they'll come out at some point. Yeah.
You know, in March, you released a track called Make Way. And this is a narrative that you return to.
Sure.
You know, this struggle to overcome.
Right.
Tell me about
the story of the underdog and the power to persevere, bootstrap.
Yeah.
Story. It's for me, that's blues, and it's I don't know. It's just something that is. It comes naturally to write, and it feels like maybe I'm. If I'm gonna try to explain it, I would say I'm channeling my family's story. It's channeling the story of my parents coming from Panama to make a better life in the U.S., channeling the story of their grandparents moving from the Caribbean to Panama to build the canal and find work. I'm channeling, you know, the story of hardship. And I think it's that tension of the challenge of success versus defeat that, you know, I'm interested in. Mm.
Well, and it's, I mean, for, you know, for anyone trying to make their way, that's the central part of life, quite frankly, is, you know,
it is.
Finding your way, making your mark.
It is. I think definitely it's definitely a Western ideology. Mm. And I'm, you know, I'm perfectly suited for it growing up here.
Yeah.
And
yeah. In the song, are you encouraging yourself as well as you're encouraging others?
The song is more about self-encouragement.
Yeah.
It's the lyric is "Make way, I'm coming through."
Yeah.
You know, not for nothing. It was written with the intention of being this kind of motivational song, a song that will be impactful for moments when people need a cheerleader, mm-hmm. a coach. And, you know, maybe that's what I am in the end is like, you know, like a motivational singer instead of a motivational speaker.
Well, I would say, you know, given what you mentioned earlier, and we'll talk about this in a minute, you know, your intention to be inspirational, mm-hmm. your intention to, you know, to provide, you know, a positive, oftentimes very supportive message in your music.
Yeah.
Speaks to that. It speaks to where you are as a person.
Yeah, I think it's hard for me to describe. I just do it because it really does come naturally to me. It's normal. It's the way I feel. It's the way I think. I have this, you know, overwhelming sense of calm and confidence, and I love to use that in my music. It's hard to do that and make it sound good if you're just completely overconfident. I usually wait for the chorus to get there. And I use the verses to show that there's doubt and that there's something to overcome, and to show some self-deprecation, and also to show some humanity. In the first lyric of "The Man," I wrote, "I believe every lie that I ever told." And it sounded, at the time I was writing it, it just sounded like a cool thing to say. But then as I, you know, as I dig deeper in it and really think about it, it feels like, you know, a sentiment that everybody can resonate with. From a philosophical side, if we just parse it logically, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Of course you believe every lie you ever told. It wasn't a lie. It was the truth to you.
Yeah.
But then there are times where you really know better, but you force yourself to believe or to act in a certain way because insecurity, safety, all of the, you know, the issues that may affect your psyche.
Do you often... Do songs, even perhaps months, years after you've written them, change? Do they reveal something, just as you were just saying, something different?
Mm. Wow. Yes, they do. When other people tell me, sometimes lyrics that I write can be heard in a different way, and it creates an entirely new meaning, but a very relevant meaning. It's like my daughter's name is Mandela. I wanted to name her Mandala. You know, I wanted to name her the Sanskrit word that, you know, describes a circle, a spiritual design. Mm. And my wife thought I was saying Mandela. And I thought, you know what? Even better. We have both.
Yeah.
And it makes so much sense. And I find that in lyrics too, when people mishear the lyric, it makes it even more rich. Mm.
Well, that's also the beauty of artistry is you put it out there, whatever it is you have to say creatively, how the world interprets and accepts it is sometimes not of your making.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there are lyrics that I wish I could change because I felt like they were the good for now lyrics that I didn't get a chance to like improve. Hmm. And, you know, people won't know what those are unless I say them. But I always think to myself, what could be the better lyric to write that could beat this one? And sometimes I throw them in on stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess most any artist would have, you know, that sort of artistic second guessing. You know, yourself.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a second guess. Yeah. I know it's not the right thing. I'm just going to do it. It's right now. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And we're going to record it. And if we get to it, we'll fix it later. Mm. But if we don't, it'll be good enough. Mm.
So you were involved in this remarkable film project.
America's Musical Journey.
And there was a song you released in conjunction with the film, My Story. Before we get to that, how did you get involved with the film?
The producers of the film, McGillivray Freeman Films, wanted to invite me in to submit a song and do an interview. And in a longer conversation, we just kind of helped craft the entire story, like the arc of the film, because I didn't think they really had a handle on how they wanted to approach music. They knew they wanted to do something with music. So along with my business partner, Gavin Massey, we spoke to them about doing a journey across America from cities that were important in the birth of a genre. And all of the, you know, major genres of the world were born here in the U.S. So that was the discussion we had. And I ended up, you know, winning the opportunity to be the featured artist taking that journey.
And quite a journey. I mean, you went.
Yeah, from New Orleans to experience jazz,
right,
up the Mississippi River to Memphis to talk about blues and rock, further up the Mississippi River to Chicago, then jazz again. I spoke with Ramsey Lewis, and then we went to New York to talk about hip hop and Nashville to talk about country. We went to Miami to talk about the Miami sound with Gloria Estefan.
Yeah, so you're doing awesome. My job.
Basically. Yeah, yeah. I got the chance to interview some of my heroes. That was awesome.
Yeah, talk a little bit. I read you, particularly Ramsey Lewis.
Yeah, Ramsey Lewis was a great meeting. I had his records and I sampled from him and I had a chance to actually sit down and meet him and talk about his upbringing and how he made music. But one of the things that really touched me was the story that he told about Maurice White. You know, I'm a huge fan of Earth, Wind & Fire, and I didn't really know the backstory. And I think there's an autobiography that I need to read. I think Maurice put one out that I'll get. But Ramsey Lewis told me about how Maurice was this very shy and quiet drummer that would hide behind his cymbals. He would tilt his cymbals so the audience couldn't see him. So he devised some way to like bring Maurice out of his shell, and he gave him a kalimba and asked him to do a kalimba solo in the middle of a song. So Maurice would do the kalimba solo behind the cymbals on his throne, behind the drums. And then over time he got more confident. He would stand up and do the solo, and then he'd move to the front of the stage to the microphone to do the solo. And, once he, I think, built up enough confidence, he just quit the band. He told Ramsey, I'm going to LA, I'm going to start a band with my brother. And they started Earth, Wind & Fire. Mm. And I think that's a beautiful story because I love the way that Ramsey tells it because, of course, he makes himself the causal agent. And I think that's fine. I think he should. Yeah. He was a mentor. He was a big brother. He was an inspiration to Maurice. And I wonder what would have happened if that kalimba didn't exist. That's really the question. Mm. And I love that, you know, one hero passed the torch down to another hero.
Yeah. Actually, reading about this caused me to go back and listen to some early Ramsey Lewis albums. And you know, I think sometimes his artistry gets lost a little, you know, a little bit.
Yeah.
And there was one from 1969. It was a live record, and it was terrific. It's just just terrific. So thank you for tipping me back to that.
I was happy to do that. I got a chance to talk to Gloria Estefan, and like one of those moments in the studio, she was listening to the song that I was writing, inspired by the trip called My Story, and it was cool to meet her and to talk to her. But as she listened to the song, she heard a lyric in the second verse that she really liked, and it meant something to her. It was gray hairs are the ribbons. No, gray hairs are the trophies for a game of life well played. And the wrinkles are ribbons for the progress that I've made. Hmm. And she, you know, I think it made sense to her because of her age, right?
Sure, sure.
And she was like, oh, that's awesome. So I ended up taking that lyric from the second verse and I just put it at the top of the song. I opened the song with it in the recording, the final recording. Almost as a thank you, a nod to her, but you know, also as a nod to all of my heroes, because if it resonated with her and all of my heroes are, you know, of age, then I think my story is in part inspired by my heroes.
Mm. And that line is just a terrific entry point into that song.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. I also understand that Louis Armstrong and some of the things you learned about him were inspiring. Tell me a little bit about.
Yeah, so Louis Armstrong started his musical journey at a super young age, and I think at 17 he was on his own going up the Mississippi River playing for money. And his journey is probably one of the most important in, I'd say, black music, in music in general, and in the civil rights movement. There were several factors from entertainers and athletes that helped to normalize blackness, but he became Louis Armstrong. And he was able to transcend color, and he became an ambassador of the U.S. through music. He became an ambassador of music through his personality, his character, his artistry. And I started, my first instrument was the trumpet, inspired by, you know, TV, black and white TV that I would see, that, you know, Dizzy Gillespie and Louis Armstrong. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Going back in your personal story, you were talking about LL Cool J, you know, earlier. And you were influenced by him.
I started writing rap lyrics at age 9, and all of them sounded like they were LL Cool J lyrics. They're definitely, you know, I didn't paraphrase or plagiarize, but it was all in the style of, for sure.
Yeah. What was it about his writing, particularly in your young years?
It was all the macho bravado, you know, very, very, very confident lyricism that he did. And also just the fact that that was the one record I actually had. My dad had purchased Michael Jackson Bad and LL Cool J Bigger and Deafer Bad. He didn't know which one to get because he was instructed to go by Bad. I was doing a play in the community, and the director wanted me to dance to Michael Jackson's Bad. So he asked my dad to go buy the record so I could practice. I ended up practicing LL Cool J lyrics for the whole summer and learned that album from front to back.
Yeah.
Okay. I love Walker Hayes. He's amazing. He's so fun, such a great entertainer. And that's why I'm so excited that JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited time men's collection for the everyday guy. The Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection is an upbeat playlist of instant classics with laid-back appeal and down-home vibes. As a dad of 7 kids, he knows exactly what fathers want and need when it comes to their style. This collection reflects his casually cool styles with outdoor-inspired details and versatile colors. Perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th, just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
We were talking earlier about, you know, the importance of being... having positive messages in your music. And I'm wondering, in terms of the writing, having, you know, always having that sense, does that give you, you know, kind of guideposts, you know, parameters, if you will, in terms of being, you know, creating a positive message about, you know, whatever you might be writing about, but it kind of gives you a lane to work in?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, I'll write and create whatever I want. Like, there's heinous concepts that I would never release to the public, that I never want my kids to hear me saying, things that, you know, I think my of course contemporaries are much more comfortable doing.
Yeah.
It's just not me, you know. It's not my character, and it's not something that I feel like is uplifting humanity. So my goal is to use my music and my artistry, my personality, my character, my interviews to uplift humanity. It's the job that I have been rewarded with with my talent. So I take it seriously.
Did that desire help kind of fuel the transition for you from hip hop to from rapping to being a singer?
Sort of. I think it was circumstance that fueled it. I think gangster rap really kind of just made it impossible for me to exist in the hip hop world as I was developing, because it became such a dominant subgenre within the genre that it overtook the backpack kind of conscious, you know, philosophical rap that I was into. Plus, I was just getting into more headier stuff and more interested in different emotions than kind of the monotony of hip hop. So, you know, it's interesting to see how the world is experiencing hip hop now and kind of who the luminaries are. But then there's a whole landscape of people in the game that aren't luminaries, but they're in the game. And I'm like, you know, why are you taking up space? Get out the way. Huh. Let somebody who actually has something to say it and have a presence. But, you know, I think it's a function of the industry, the business, the distribution method. You know, streaming is skewed toward youth because they have ample discretionary time to stream.
Yeah.
So then because that's what pays the bills for the record labels, they're going to, create that as much as possible. Yeah. And
there's, you just thinking about the current climate that we're all facing these days, it seems as though we're more divided than we've ever been along cultural lines, along political lines, along economic lines. And for you, and this is really a personal question, how do you keep your chin up?
Well, I don't know if I believe that we're that divided. I know it seems that way. But when I go around the world, I see audiences that are completely mixed and shoulder to shoulder, fellowshipping in the beauty and celebration of music. And I feel like what we receive in the information that we seek or in the algorithms that seek us can tell us a story that is not true. And I think the true story is that we have so much more in common and that we want togetherness more than we are willing to accept, because capitalism doesn't work unless there's tension. And that tension is going to be the driving, motivation to get us to purchase and heal. We make these purchases to cover up and purchases to subdue. But if we find a way to remove all of those messages, remove the desires that are created by marketing and media, and the attitudes and the feelings that are created by marketing and media, we'll realize that we are much more similar than different. And the big hot button topics that keep getting played are quite trivial compared to the things that really matter. Food, clothing, shelter, love.
You've been kind of outspoken on any number of important issues, and topics, immigration, incarceration, education, the issue of malaria. Where does that sense of responsibility for you come from?
When I decided to sign a contract with a major label, I realized that I had access to a megaphone that was much bigger than what I had prior, and that I have a duty to use it in the right way, and that there are roads and pathways that were already laid for me by my predecessors. Harry Belafonte, Sidney Poitier, Robeson, Maya Angelou. Even if we want to get even more current, Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
And I say a lot when people ask, but Michael Jackson, I'd say 80% of his songs were social message songs. He was just dressed up with the great marketing tool of pop music. Black or White was the only hit song about racial tolerance. Why is it the only hit song about racial tolerance? There should be more.
Yeah. You've talked about his skill at including these kinds of messages in, arguably some of the best pop music ever made.
Yeah.
And that was, it's the music that's the vector.
Yeah, the medicine, for the spoonful of sugar with the medicine. And so I use that as a template. Like if I can figure out how to get the message into the lyric and then wrap it up in the production to get it to their ears, then I've won the battle.
You've referred to yourself, and I love this term, as an artivist. Explain a little bit.
Yeah, it's a combination of the word activist and artist, and it is the use of my art for positive social transformation. And I have friends who are visual artists like Ernesto Llerena, who works closely with Shepard Fairey, mm-hmm. who are also artivists.
Yeah.
And I have friends that are dancers that are artivists who create the movements and choreography to tell stories about humanity and equality. And then, you know, the music, musicians. There are so many great musicians. One of my favorite of all time is Eugene McDaniels, who, you know, wrote, I think, the best political album of all time in 1971 called Headless Heroes of the Apocalypse. Mm. But unfortunately, it was so good that Nixon's administration shut it down, pulled it from the shelves. Mm. So I've covered it, and I'm, you know, my goal is to spread that message again.
Yeah. You mentioned a couple people here just now, Harry Belafonte, among them. Who would you consider your mentors? People who have offered good advice, encouragement, mentorship.
I wouldn't say that there's any one person that I've sat with and had mentorship on a regular basis, mm. but I glean from folks like Harry Belafonte and the words of Nelson Mandela, Mahatma Gandhi, the words of Martin Luther King. These are, you know, the elders who have made their statements that last a lifetime. And if they're not, if their words are not echoed, if their philosophies and ideologies are not followed, then they will die with them. Because I have this megaphone, I have to use it to further those ideologies and those words, mm-hmm. because those are the ones that hold true. And to be a point of difference in the marketplace, to be the counterpoint when things are skewed, a little bit dark and depressed and violent or misogynistic. I heard a lyric on the radio once that was "Live fast, die young." And I thought to myself, the person saying this doesn't really mean it. Mm. But when they say it, they offer everyone else an opportunity to say it 100 times because those words become a mantra that you sing. Now, everything that comes into your body and your mind is you're consuming becomes part of you in some way. Hopefully you're strong enough to reject the pragmatic side of the message and it's just theory. I don't have faith that everybody is strong enough for that, especially teenagers who are trying to develop their sense of self. So I decided I wanted to write a song that was the counterpoint to that. And if I can get the right marketing around it, the right production and everything, then it would serve as counterpoint and hopefully become a bigger message of not wanting to live fast and die young.
Hmm. Hmm. Your father spent 30 years in the Marines.
Yeah.
And I was reading that he always felt as though even whether he was, you know, on duty or in active service, when he went out, wherever, whether it was here or overseas, he represented the United States.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, first of all, did he pass that sense on to you?
He did. He definitely passed the sense on to me that I am an ambassador of this country when I'm outside of the country.
Hmm.
And, you know, I understand the sentiment. I agree with it. I take it a step further and say, I'm a global citizen. I'm an ambassador of humanity. My job is to show what we can be in when we're being, you know, good to other people. And it has to be thorough. Unless I'm super specific and super candid that it is strictly for art's sake, and then it has to be through and through. It can't just be like one day, one character, another day, another character. Mm. You know, because I think that could be harmful to the world.
One of the things that you've also been outspoken about, and something that the Recording Academy has also been very much, you know, kind of at the front of the line, is compensation for songwriters, mm-hmm. and making sure that songwriters are appropriately compensated.
Absolutely. Appropriately compensated and credited.
Yes. Yes. Tell me a little bit, you know, how did you first kind of come to this issue and tell us why it's important?
I started reading copyright law pretty early in my music career,
yeah.
because I wanted to copyright my songs. So I think my first copyright was 2001. Hmm. I sent in the paperwork and I started understanding what everything meant, and then looking at some of the things that were obligatory and kind of statutory things that we don't have a decision about. And I look at other industries and I see so much leeway and so many rights that are available. But as songwriters, we're one of the most heavily restricted business people in the world, small businesses, as songwriters, because of the laws that restrict us from, you know, kind of deciding the value of our creation. I'd love to see those kind of things change. And so I threw my hat in the ring to join the fight against this antiquated system that needs to be updated, especially as technology is changing and businesses are, you know, making money hand over fist, where it's not trickling down to the actual creator of the content. Mm. I think it's important for songwriters, the people who put the emotions into a form that will translate to other people. It's time for them to be treated fairly and respected for what they've done.
Yeah. And we recently got a bill through the House.
Yes.
The Music Modernization Act.
Got
some work to do in the Senate, but
unanimously passed.
Yeah.
It would be hard. Yeah. It would be hard to think that it would not pass in the Senate if it passed unanimously in the House. Yeah. How could human beings be so different?
Mm. Mm.
I don't think human beings will be so different.
Yeah. Well, I'm hopeful.
Corporations, on the other hand.
Yeah. Different story.
Yeah.
Different story. Last question. I've read of your personal aspiration to be a member of the Songwriters Hall of Fame.
Oh yeah. That's I've made the goal to be on my best behavior when it comes to songwriting, because you can't get to Songwriters Hall of Fame by just writing hits. There are plenty of people with a lot of hits that'll never get there because their hits didn't have the real merit of songwriting. And so if I don't make it there, at least I know that everything that I did was with the intention of getting there. So there was no fluff.
Mm-hmm. Well, we couldn't be more pleased that you took the time to join us on Required Listening. The new track is called Brooklyn in the Summer. Does the album have a name yet or no?
The album doesn't have a name, and I've never done a self-titled album, so who knows?
All right.
Maybe time.
All right. Well, we'll look for that later this year. Aloe Black, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Nothing describes Aloe Black better than the term artivist. This is truly a thoughtful artist and songwriter, and I'm excited to hear his new album when it comes out later this year. For now, check out tracks like My Story or Brooklyn in the Summer to get a sense of his current musical state of mind. For fun, I'd say go back and listen to Ramsey Lewis's 1969 album Another Voyage. It might just give you a sense as to why Aloe finds Ramsey Lewis so compelling. And that's your Required Listening for today. We've got fresh episodes coming to you every Thursday. We'd love to hear from you, and we're on all the socials at Grammy Museum. If you're coming to Los Angeles, I hope you'll come and see us. All the info is at our website, GrammyMuseum.org. As always, props to the team that brings this podcast to you every week. Justin Joseph, Jim Canella, Lynn Sheridan, Miranda Moore, Callie Weissman, Len Brown, Jason Hoke, Chan LeMays, Nick Stumpf, Mike Rohrabacher, and everybody at How Stuff Works. For Required Listening, I'm Scott Goldman. We'll see you next time.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection, and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.